Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Janmanyasya yatonvayat itadatas charti shvabhi gakswarat tini brahmaridaya adikovoye diyat suraya ha tejo vadi midam yata vindamayo yatra tvisargo misha damna svena sada astakuhakam satyam param dimahi.
I don't know what paragraph. Yes, you know where? Okay, I got it. Okay. Yes. Continuing the purport.
Oh, let me read the translation.
Translation. Oh, my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, oh, all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire, or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of matter, of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. Continuing the purport. In the Shruti Mantra, it is also stated that the absolute whole, or Brahman, is the ultimate source of everything. Everything emanates from him, and everything is maintained by him. And in the and at the end, everything enters into him. That is the law of nature. In the Smriti Mantra, the same is confirmed. It is said that the source from which everything emanates at the beginning of Brahma's millennium, and the reservoir to which everything ultimately enters, is the absolute truth, or Brahman. Material scientists take it for granted that the ultimate source of the planetary systems is the sun, but they are unable to explain the source of the sun. Herein, the ultimate source is explained. According to the Vedic literature, Brahma, who may be compared to the sun, is not the ultimate creator. It is stated in the shloka that Brahma was taught Vedic knowledge by the personality of Godhead. One may argue that Brahma, being the original living being, could not be inspired because there was no other being living at that time. Herein it is stated that the Supreme Lord inspired the secondary creator Brahma in order that Brahma could carry out his creative functions. So the supreme intelligence behind all creations is the absolute Godhead, Sri Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Sri Krishna states that it is he alone who superintends the creative energy, Prakriti, which constitutes the totality of matter. Therefore, Sri Vyasadeva does not worship Brahma, but the Supreme Lord, who guides Brahma in his creative activities. In this shloka, the particular words abhigyak and srarat are significant. These two words distinguish the Supreme Lord from all other living entities. No other living entity is either abhigyak or srarat. That is, no one is either fully cognizant or fully independent. Even Brahma has to meditate upon the Supreme Lord in order to create. Then what to speak of great scientists like Einstein? The brains of such a scientist are certainly not the products of any human being. Scientists cannot manufacture such a brain. And what to speak of foolish atheists who defy the authority of the Lord? Even Mayavad impersonalists who flatter themselves. Even Mayavad impersonalists who flatter themselves that they can become one with the Lord are neither abhigya or srarat. Such impersonalists undergo severe austerities to acquire knowledge to become one with the Lord. But ultimately they become dependent on some rich disciple who supplies them with money to build monasteries and temples. Atheists like Ravana or Hiranyakashipu had to undergo severe penances before they could flout the authority of the Lord. But ultimately, they were rendered helpless and could not save themselves when the Lord appeared before them as cruel death. This is also the case with the modern atheists, who also dare to flout the authority of the Lord. Such atheists will be dealt with similarly, for history repeats itself. Whenever men neglect the authority of the Lord, nature and her laws are there to penalize them. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, in the well-known verse, Yada, yada, hi dharmasya gladir bhavati. Whenever there is a decline of dharma and a rise of adharma, O Arjuna, then I incarnate myself. Abhigya and Srarat, these two words. He knows everything, fully cognizant. Abhigya, abhi can mean all around. He knows everything from all angles. And Swarat, we were discussing that yesterday. It was also discussed in Bhagavad Sandarbha. He appears as a person. He manifests his opulences. And he does so independently. He doesn't have to depend on anybody else's strength or guidance to be what he is. But Srarat also means that he's the independent controller of everything. Raj means to rule. So he is the ruler, but nobody made him the ruler. He's the absolute ruler, controller of everything. Not only controller, he's the creator, maintainer and destroyer, but also the controller. These are different roles. The same person is performing these different functions, but they are different functions. To create, to maintain, to destroy, and then control is another separate function. I may not be the maintainer. I may not supply the air, the water. I may not pay your salary, but I may have control over you. I'm not the boss, but I've been appointed your superintendent, so I'm controlling you. So to be the controller is even different than being maintainer. Some parents maintain their children but don't control them. Others don't do a good job of maintaining, but they control. So they're two different things. He's also the controller of everything, and all by himself. Nobody appointed him controller. He's not a subordinate controller under somebody else's control. And he doesn't need any help. He has no superior and no assistants. He doesn't need any assistants. He can do it all by himself. He doesn't need any help. He may accept help, but he doesn't need it. That's Swarat. He's independently, separate, all by himself, in control, absolute control of everything and everybody. That makes him better than everybody else. That's why he's the supreme absolute truth, Satyam Param. He's certainly real. A person may exist, but he's a nobody if he has no control over anybody, if he doesn't know anything, if he knows nothing, he never went to school, can't even write his name, doesn't know how to do anything, and nobody listens to him, he has no authority over anybody, then he's a relative nobody. He's an insubstantial person. Yeah, I mean, he exists just as much as anybody else does, but he doesn't have substance. A person who knows, and a person who has power, he's a person of substance. So Satyam Param, the reality, supreme reality, the supremely, how do we say in the second verse? Vastavam Vastu, something of substance, something that has, that knows what he's doing, and has influence over others. That's the absolute truth. The one who has the most knowledge and the most influence. That's Satyam Param. So just that Prabhupada's discussing the consequences of him being all-knowing. Brahma is the creator of this world. Just like we have the concept in the Western religions of the God the Creator, Jehovah, whatever you want to call him. And there are some mystics who say that he's not the ultimate God, that the one who does the creation is just an expansion, and the real God doesn't do anything. This is sort of a Mayavadi idea, but it's crept in, that kind of Mayavad influence has crept into Western thought as well. Well, it's like that. Brahma is the person who does the work, the actual engineering, the actual detailed planning, and the actual execution is done by Brahma or under his authority. So he is, to extents and purposes, the creator of this world, to practical extents and purposes. But he's not the ultimate. He's working under someone else's authority. He has plenty of knowledge, enough knowledge to do everything he has to do. He has enough power to see that it gets done. He has the power, the knowledge and the authority and the strength to create and maintain the whole universe. That's greater than anybody else you can show me. Show me any dictator, emperor, Genghis Khan or Adolf Hitler or any big business magnate. None of them have the knowledge and the power of Lord Brahma. Now, the most powerful person you can name, the most knowledgeable and influential person. Brahma is the first of all living entities, not only because he was born first, but he's the most eminent, the most prominent, the most knowledgeable, and the most powerful. Therefore, he is authorized to create and control the whole universe. But he's not independent in his knowledge. He's not independently Abhigya and Swarat. He's paratantra, under somebody else's control. Even he doesn't even know anything except for what the Supreme Lord taught him personally. Tene Brahma Vidaya Adikavaye. The personality of Godhead Vishnu instructed Brahma in everything he knows from within the heart. We'll read in the third canto how Brahma was in ignorance. He didn't know how to start creating. He didn't know who he was and where he was. Only after Lord Vishnu revealed that knowledge to him within the heart, and then also face to face, did Brahma understand what he needed to know. His knowledge is derivative. He had to learn it. He had to get it from the Supreme Source. And his power to do anything, to create a universe or to even lift his finger, he only has because the Supreme Lord Vishnu gave it to him. Deputized. He's paratantra, under the control of another. That's the example Prabhupada gives. That's why Brahma is mentioned in this verse. Because here's somebody who told Brahma everything he knows. There are many teachers in the world, people who are know more than somebody else. Everybody knows more than somebody else. No matter how ignorant you are, you can find someone else that's more ignorant than you, and you can enlighten him in the two or three things you know. They might not be right, but you have some idea, you think you know something, and you can take on a disciple somewhere in the world. And you, no matter how powerless you are, you can find someone else to oppress. There's always someone less powerful than you. You can find out. That everybody's common position is that they're more powerful. They're more powerful than somebody, and no more than somebody. Everyone can say that. But the Supreme Lord knows more than everybody, and is more and can control everybody, even up to Brahma. Even Brahma had to learn from him. That's remarkable, and that's why the remark is made in this verse: Tene Brahma Vida. If even Lord Brahma had to come to Vishnu to learn his ABCs, then Vishnu must be very wise. And if even Brahma had to be empowered by Vishnu to do his service, then Brahma, then that Satyam Param must be the all-powerful. Hare Krishna. I think I'll read another paragraph. Are there first any questions on this one? No? Okay. You can ask questions after. I mean, after when we get to the end of the next paragraph. Okay. Continuing in the purport. That the Supreme Lord is all perfect is confirmed in the Shruti mantras. It is said in the Shruti mantras that the all perfect Lord threw a glance over matter and thus created all living beings. The living beings are parts and parcels of the Lord, and he impregnates the vast material creation with seeds of spiritual sparks, and thus the creative energies are set into motion to enact so many wonderful creations. An atheist may argue that God is no more expert than a watchmaker. But of course God is greater, because he can create machines in duplicate male and female forms. The male and female forms of different types of machineries go on producing innumerable similar machines without God's further attention. If a man could manufacture such a set of machines that could produce other machines without his attention, then he could approach the intelligence of God. But that is not possible, for each machine has to be handled individually. Therefore, no one can create as well as God. Another name for God is Asamaodva, which means that no one is equal to or greater than him. Param Satyam, or the supreme truth, is he that has no equal or superior. This is confirmed in the Shruti mantras. It is said that before the creation of the material universe, there existed the Lord only, who is master of everyone. That Lord instructed Brahma in Vedic knowledge. That Lord has to be obeyed in all respects. Anyone who wants to get rid of the material entanglement must surrender unto him. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita.
So,
Shruti mantras, the texts of the Upanishads especially, are explaining to us the nature of this absolute truth. We will not be introduced, at least in this philosophical presentation, we don't get introduced to the personality of God until we first understand how the absolute truth is controlling his energies. Understand the Supreme as the creator of this world first. Then you can properly appreciate him in his more personal, intimate aspects, his pastimes, his pleasure pastimes. The first lila we're taught about is the Srishti lila, the pastime of creation. It's also a pastime, but it's not as much fun as many of the other pastimes. What is the rasa to be enjoyed in being a participant in the Srishti lila? The Lord has participants, the living entities who join him in his pastimes. He does something and they also participate in the activity. Rasa dance, playing in the forest, killing demons. They all, you know, the boys and the friends and the parents, they different devotees, they have participation in the pastimes. So who's participating in the Srishti Lila? And what's the role? Brahma gets to participate. It's a little bit of fun for him, but it's a lot of hard work, a lot of anxiety. Brahma's participation in creating the world. And then the other living entities, well, they're getting thrown into illusion. That's not much fun. So where's, you know, what kind of rasa is there in this lila? It's the Lord's enjoyment, but for most everybody else, it's not much fun to be created into the material world. But it's a lila. Everything the Lord does is his lila. This is his, maybe his least favorite lila, least glorious thing that God does is create the material world. Just like building a prison house is the least pleasant thing the government has to do. If they didn't have any criminals, they wouldn't bother to build a prison house just to have a nice building or spend some more money. Let's build a prison. But we don't have any criminals. So therefore, no need for a prison if there were no criminals. Only because you have to do it, you do it. Only because living entities are rebellious, which it would be better that no living entities rebelled. And then there wouldn't be any need for a material universe, and they would just cancel. You know, this season, sorry, material universe is canceled. No, nobody wants to take birth in it. It doesn't happen, but it would if nobody wanted to rebel. If all the lingering souls finally came to their senses and got liberation, there was nobody left, then you could cancel the universe, at least temporarily, postpone it. It's created because it has to be, because there are rebellious souls. But it's not much fun. Lord, he always enjoys, no matter what he does, Supreme Lord. But for the rest of us, for the ashraya, the vishaya, the Supreme Lord himself, okay, it's everything he does, it's kevala ananda kanda. Anandamayopyasat. He's always blissful. But the ashrayas, the devotees who are taking part, or the living entities who are taking part in being cast in creation, there's no rasa there for them. Just like in the pastimes in which the Supreme Lord kills demons. Generally the demons, unless there's somebody really special, they're not experiencing love. They're experiencing inappropriate emotions.
Hatred of God,
hatred of his devotees, anger, lust. Ravana was full of lust. Kamsa was full of fear of Krishna. Shishupala was full of envy and anger. So these emotions are not rasas. Although there is a rasa going on, there is a taste, but it's enjoyed by the devotees and by the Supreme Lord, not by the demons. They don't get to share the rasa, just like Mohini doesn't let the demons have any of the nectar. They're sitting down and they're expecting to get some, but they get cheated. So those who are participating in Krishna's pastimes in an envious, lusty, greedy, materialistic mood, they don't taste any rasa. It's flowing around them, but they miss it. Like that, the living entities, most of us in this Srishti Leela, we're all participants in the Srishti Leela, creation pastime, but we're not tasting the rasa, we're missing it. Because we're in this material world out of envy, and we want ignorance, and we're covered by ignorance, and in ignorance you don't taste rasa. But still, it's the Lord's pastime, and it's the first one described in the Bhagavatam also. Bhagavatam, especially in the second and third cantos, describes the creation, and even part of the third canto, describes the creation of this universe by Vishnu and then continued by Brahma in great detail. Because we should learn about and understand this pastime of the Lord first. Then we know what God is. We have a good idea of what God is. He's the one who did the Janma Adi Asya, the creation and maintenance and destruction of this world. He's the one with all the power and all the knowledge, the one who actually does all this. We understand how he creates this world, then we understand he's not an ordinary person, not an ordinary boy, not an ordinary man. And then when we read his pastimes, we'll take them seriously. Otherwise, we'll think Krishna is just another lusty boy like me, or like my neighbor. So therefore, it's important to study the first parts of the Bhagavatam, to study it systematically and understand who this personality of Godhead is and how he's this world that we think is so important. This universe that's everything we know, and we don't know anything beyond it. That it only exists by a tiny spark of the potency of that Supreme Person. You think this material world is so important, or some particular aspect of it is important to you. You know, the stock exchange, or the game of politics in your particular country is important. But that's just one little flow of energy that's a tiny part of the material creation. The whole material creation is emanating from just a spark of the splendor of the Supreme Person. You can imagine then what potency he has. Why not become interested in him? That's what the Upanishads are trying to tell us. Tadvigyasasva, that absolute truth, that's what we should be interested in. That's what we should inquire into. Okay, so are there any questions or comments? Yes? Vishnu, how do you ask a question?
The living entities fall down from the spiritual worlds ultimately because of this quality envy. The living entity envies the Lord, and it happens to be the first negative quality that appears in the spiritual entity. And so from that time immemorial, this bad quality is being associated with the soul, and consequently all other negative qualities like lust, pride, anger and things follows.
Yes.
Is it right?
Yes.
So because it is so deeply rooted in the soul, this quality envy is so difficult to, and the subsequent other qualities are so difficult to conquer. So what is the best and easiest way to conquer these qualities?
It's envy, and it's envy against God. against Krishna. It's only become secondarily when Krishna says, you envy me? Okay, I'm going to stay out of your way. So you'll have to pick out somebody else. And therefore we have to find somebody else to envy because Krishna doesn't stand in front of us, to receive our envy. He just hides himself from us. I mean, then we have to envy other people. But it's basically, first of all, envy against Krishna. The solution is to serve the Vaishnavas. Krishna's not going to stand in front of us, for us to spit in his face. He's going to stay away from us. But he lets us have access to the Vaishnavas. At least we shouldn't spit in their face. We should be respectful and helpful servants of the Vaishnavas and gain their pleasure. If they're satisfied with us, then maybe Krishna will have a second thought about us. And maybe he'll come back into our lives. If we've pleased the Vaishnavas. That's it. That's our only hope. That's the recommended strategy for undoing our envy against Vishnu. Get the blessings of the Vaishnavas.
And because other qualities follows envy, so is it that if we conquer that, then all other things will be conquered?
Yeah, if you deal directly with the envy, then everything else will be dealt with. If you can. You may not even recognize it. You may think you don't have any envy, so then you'll deal with other things. You'll deal with other problems because you don't recognize the envy. But if you can pinpoint the envy and focus on it directly, then you can accomplish get rid of all your inertias. Okay. Shiva, do you have something? The Supreme Person?
I was wondering if you would kindly explain the benefits of taking shelter of this person who is all-knowing and who is fully independent.
Well, in general, you're lacking knowledge, you're lacking power or some other asset, you need money, you need to get something to eat. What do you do about it? Easier than, digging into the ground and looking for gold or planting seeds and waiting 6 months. Go to somebody who has some money. Go to somebody who has some food and somehow get them to give you some. Go to somebody who has knowledge. Go to somebody who has power. Take shelter of them. Either in love or in manipulatively, somehow or other, get what they can share with you what they have. So even apart from the question of pure love and surrender and all this altruistic thought, just for pure selfish motives, you should go to the person who has the power and the knowledge, because he can give you some. And then there's other higher motives, why you should love God and why you should surrender to him. But this is even from pure selfish point of view. Go where it is. Rather than recreate it, figure everything out for yourself. Go to the person who knows and just ask him to instruct you. Go to the person who has the assets you need and ask him to share a little bit with you. Is that okay? Okay.
The purpose of creation of this material world is one of the purposes is to liberate all this, to rectify all these rebellious living entities which came to this world. So, is there any? You explained that in first part when they are coming into ignorance, there is not so much taste for Supreme Lord to create this world. But at the same time, when he is giving mercy, his mercy to them and uplifting them, to liberating them from this material world, is there any some special sweetness for Krishna to help this living entity to come back to him?
It gives Krishna great relief. It's pleasure in the sense of relief of pain. You know, there's positive pleasure, but there's also negation of pain. So Krishna is suffering pain. There's arguments over that. Anyway, Krishna's not happy that we're in this material world. Let's not say he's suffering pain. He's not satisfied that we're in this world. And so it gives him great relief, and that kind of relief of pain happiness, when one living entity or more are recovered and brought back to Godhead. But the Supreme Lord doesn't do this mostly himself, this recovering of living entities, because it involves interfering with the living entity's entanglement. And the Lord's vow is that I won't interfere. You want to be in Maya? I'll let you be in Maya. If you want to surrender to me, I'll be glad for you to surrender to me, but I won't force you to do it. If I force you to surrender, if I trick you into surrendering, or force you, then it's not love, it's not voluntary. So I have to leave you alone and let you decide when you want to surrender. And you decide how long you want to, if you want to remain in foolish ignorance forever, I'll let you do it. So the Lord's vow is not to interfere with the autonomy of the living entities. He's got to let the devotees do that for him, interfere. So most of the work of recovering living entities is done by the deputies of the Lord, by his devotees. But they're creating pleasure for him by doing that. Here's an opportunity to give Krishna great pleasure. Help him recover living entities, because he's not going to do it himself. Yeah, he's not going to take the garbage out. If you do it for him, he'll be happy. He's not going to go out and get the souls. But if you go out and get them and bring them to him, Kashyat may be a Kritamaha. There's nobody more dear to me than him. Yeah. Than the one who's preaching. Yes. Oh, that's a different verse. That's close. But not exactly the same one. This will follow up from Savagin.
I have a second question, if you kindly allow me. So it's about, is there any something special in Krishna's pastimes in this material world which is missing in his pastimes in the spiritual world? So he's creating and he's coming also in this world.
Just that there's no much opportunity to preach in the spiritual world because nobody's an illusion, nobody's in Maya. So to enjoy preaching has to be done in the material world. And the other activity that isn't done in the spiritual world is killing demons. So for preaching and killing demons, the Lord and his devotees have to come to this world. Other things can be done better in the spiritual world, everything else.
Damara Gopal gave up his turn. Let me let him ask his question, then yours.
Yes. Sorry. Like you said, we should not spit in the face of devotees, criticize them out of envy.
Disrespect them.
Disregard them.
Okay.
It seems there's something I have difficulty understanding. Is that different devotees have different opinions of maybe how to preach.
Yes.
And they might criticize each other.
Yes.
And that we should not take sides. Especially that's my understanding, and also from the Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's this pastime of thinking of Advaita Acharya and Lord Nityananda.
Yes.
And then Advaita Acharya criticized Lord Nityananda, and then says, if one sides with Advaita Acharya, and calls also Nityananda a madman, then he's going to hell or something.
Well, the subordinates should not credit when the superiors, the equals, when the peers, equals, have disagreement with one another, then the subordinates should not get involved. The peers can argue with one another, the equals. But those who are under the equals should say, this is not our business. If they, just like the nobles in medieval Europe, they'd fight with each other, and then the peasants would be conscripted into the army to fight on one side or the other. And they just do what they're told.
You know, you may have to fight because your master orders you to join his army, but you don't get involved in politics. You're just a peasant. Like that, we're Krishna's peasants. The authorized devotees are disagreeing among one another about how to do things. That's they're our superiors. You know, we're just privates in the army.
Okay. So sometimes there may be a scenario. I mean, I'm just thinking a scenario of confusion. If one, if they have different opinion, and you're listening to both of them, and they instruct you differently.
Well, you should have a clear line of authority. Under whose authority are you serving? You know, it should be, in case there's a disagreement between different authorities, you have to know who's your first authority. That's why the Diksha Guru is considered first authority for a disciple. And he may be following guidance from various Shiksha authorities, but when there's disagreement, he has to take the opinion of the Diksha Guru first. So if you're in a situation where you're stuck, you got two people who you accept as authority telling you two opposite things, then you have to go to the Diksha Guru to sort it out.
Thank you very much.
Sure. I'm sorry, Madan Mohan Prabhu.
I just want to ask you about Krishna's appearance here in this world, because it's explained that his prime and probably the only reason for appearance is to protect his devotees,
yes.
Although he does list to other reasons to annihilate the demons and protect
yes.
principles of religion. So is the idea I've been thinking about recently, I want to check with you, if the idea that, for instance, by maintaining his devotees, he automatically fulfills the two other purposes, because maintenance of his devotees sets the highest law of dharma, and also he empowers his devotees to fight demons, or sometimes he fights demons himself, who are actually his devotees, and this way he protects them.
Well, among his devotees are the demigods, and material nature herself. And these demigods, controlling demigods and material nature, pulling all the strings, manage to deal with the demons usually. Demons are all annihilated by time, by death, by material nature. They all get old, no matter who they are, they get old and get sick. You know, they can be knocked down by a few microbes. You know, they don't need to send the whole army of Narayan to kill the demons when they can be killed by a germ. So the killing the demons, eliminating the demons is done by Krishna's material energy easily. And usually establishing religious principles is done by religious founders who are usually devotees. Not often, sometimes the Lord himself does the preaching, but usually he lets his devotees do the preaching, the establishing of religious principles. So he does these indirectly. But to save the devotees, but we should understand what's the higher sense of saving the devotees. What's the difference between saving Prahlad and killing Nrisingadev? Same thing, isn't it? Just looking at why is it two different things? Save the devotee by killing the demon, or by establishing religious principles. No, but this is something different. The real different sense of saving the devotees is saving them from the pain of separation. By appearing. The only thing you can do is appear. If they're in separation, the only thing you can do is eliminate the separation by appearing. That's how he saves his devotees. And so he appears to save the devotees from suffering and separation from him.
I think, just to confirm that point, I think there's a statement in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam in Prahlada Narasimha Lila, where Prabhupada says that the Supreme Lord doesn't have to do anything, but whenever he does something personally, he does it only for the sake of his devotees.
Yes.
Everything else is done by his energies, but
yes.
Personally he does things only for his devotees.
Yes.
That's what Prabhupada says.
Yes.
So in other words, those two principles, Vinashayacha Dushkritam and Dharma Samsthapanarthaya, they're not just secondary purposes, but they're just byproducts of his taking care of devotees properly.
Yeah.
Can we say that?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. I agree with you. I think we have to stop for breakfast, but I agree with you. You can do the last comment.
What is the relation between this Ashraya Vigraha and Vishaya Vigraha, and how could we will follow and we will achieve this Krishna Prema?
Ashraya Vigraha is the person, personality, who is serving as the Ashraya and Vishaya. Vishaya is the object of love, and Ashraya is the subject of love. Someone is loving somebody. The person who's doing the loving is called the Ashraya. The devotion resides in him. And the devotion is going out to the person who's loved. So Krishna is the Vishaya, always, and the devotees are the Ashraya. So in general, Ashraya Vigraha means the personality of the devotee. Difference is the difference between God and his devotee.
Who has taken shelter of Lord, he is Ashraya Vigraha.
No, that's not the meaning of Ashraya there. This is a technical sense of Ashraya. When you have an activity, this is coming from grammar. Yeah, the place where you live is your Ashraya. And the place where you go out to do something, like the king lives in his palace, but he goes out in the kingdom to do his work. So the palace, there's two different kinds of location. The place where you live is called the Ashraya, and the place where you go to do something else is called the Vishaya. So devotion lives in the devotees, but it comes out of the devotees and contacts Krishna. It connects Krishna with the devotees. So like a king coming out of his palace to go out in the kingdom, the devotion emanates from the devotees and reaches Krishna. So that's why Krishna is the Vishaya. He is the thing outside that the devotee has, the devotion has to reach. That's what Vishaya and Ashraya means there. Okay?
It means first one should take shelter of a devotee?
No, it doesn't mean taking shelter.
No, it means first one will follow the first step of Ashraya Vigraha, means you will follow the instruction of sadhu and then
okay. You will go. Okay, I guess you can read it like that also.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.